Audio and Canongate Books present this unabridged recording of
Not My Father's Son, written and read by Alan Cumming. For Mary D., the Two Toms, and Grant Schaefer. Part 1. Then and Now. Then. You need a haircut, boy. My father had only glanced at me across the kitchen table as he spoke, but I had already seen in his eyes the coming storm. I tried to speak, but the fear that now engulfed me made it hard to swallow, and all that came out was a little gasping sound that hurt my throat even more. And I knew speaking would only make things worse, make him despise me more, make him pounce sooner. That was the worst bit, the waiting. I never knew exactly when it would come, and that, I know, was his favourite part. As usual, we had eaten our evening meal in near silence until my father had spoken. Until recently, my older brother, Tom, would have been seated where I was now, helping to deflect the gaze of impending rage that was now focused entirely upon me. But Tom had a job now. He left every morning in a shirt and tie, and our father hated him for it. Tom was no longer in his thrall. Tom had escaped. I hadn't been so lucky yet. My mother tried to intervene. "I'll take him to the barber's on Saturday morning, Ali," she said. "He'll be working on Saturday. He's not getting away with slouching off his work again. There's too much of that going on in this house. Do you hear me?" "Yes," I managed. But now I knew it was a lost cause. It wasn't just a haircut. It was now my physical shortcomings as a labourer, my inability to perform the tasks he gave me every weekend and many evenings, tasks I was unable to perform because I was 12, but mostly because he wanted me to fail at them so he could hit me. You see, I understood my father. I had learned from a very young age to interpret the tone of every word he uttered, his body language, the energy he brought into a room. It has not been pleasant as an adult to realize that dealing with my father's violence was the beginning of my studies of acting. "I can get one tomorrow at school lunchtime." My voice trailed off in that way I knew sounded too pleading, too weak, but I couldn't help it. "Yes, do that, pet," my mum said kindly. I could sense the optimism in her tone and I loved her for it. But I knew it was false optimism, denial. This was going to end badly and there was no way to prevent it. Every night, getting off the school bus, walking through the gates of the estate where we lived, past the sawmill yard where my father reigned, and towards our house was like a lottery. Would he be home yet? What mood would he be in? As soon as I entered the house and changed out of my school uniform and began my chores, bringing wood and coal in for the fire, starting the fire, setting the table, warming the plates, putting the potatoes on to boil, I felt a bit safer. You see, by then I was on his territory, under his command. I worked for him, and that seemed to calm my father, as though my utter servitude was necessary to his well-being. I still wasn't completely safe, of course. I was never safe. But those chores were so ingrained in me, and I felt I did them well enough that even if he did inspect them, I would pass muster.